Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 217, and it's proudly brought to you by the ever-growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support. And if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. James, I guess when this episode goes up, it will be Thanksgiving here in the U.S.
Yeah, let's kick off with a big hearty Thanksgiving to everybody who celebrates it in the States.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving's a pretty big deal in the States.
So it sure is, yeah.
I hope people get to enjoy it and you get kind of a forced long weekend, extra long weekend.
I think between the long weekend and the fact that there's no pressure to like buy gifts or that sort of thing, it kind of is this, you know, it's one of my favorite holidays just because it's like you get together, hang out, eat some good food, see some family, and there isn't that like hype surrounding it like you get the day after Thanksgiving. So
yeah, I think it's great. And you know, in Canada, it's a lot more chill.
Yeah,
we don't have as much going on. It's kind of a nice family hangout. Some people take it pretty seriously and do big things. And I always really love being part of that when it was possible. It feels like that was a long time ago before COVID.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the how seriously Americans take it. And I do like that aside from the kind of Black Friday element, which is kind of comes and goes in its level of grossness, people getting hurt for deals is obviously bad and has happened in the past.
Yeah.
I do like that at least now you just do most of that from the comfort of your couch. And it's also super easy to ignore, you know, a la Patagonia or something like that. But yeah, a good one. And I hope everybody has a great time. And if you get to this episode a few days late, that's A-okay. And you have an extra plus because, hey, the Slack is live. Probably something like 12 hours before this episode went live. Everyone who's a supporter, whether you're the $5 a month folks or the $100 a year folks, should have gotten an email with an invite link. It'll be in your inbox. If you can't find it, you can go to Substack. Just make sure you're logged in and you can find the post, which is for subscribers only, which has a link to bring you into the Slack. We've been testing it for the last couple of days. It's going really well. We're super pumped, but all the details are in your email. Please read the email. I would appreciate that as well. And then click the link, make an account, and hop in there and chit-chat with us all you like.
Yeah, it's so exciting. We've sort of did a soft opening with a few close friends within the past few days. And already it's kind of cranked up to just be a fun little group. And I can't wait once it starts to grow. I think it's going to get to be a bit of a distraction, so to speak, from day-to-day work. I'm going to have to, you know, set some rules for myself when to dip in there and not, because there's a lot of kind of cool discussions that'll happen, I'm sure.
Yeah, and if you want to be part of the Slack and also support the show and everything else, we've talked about it on most of the recent episodes because it's been about a year, but there's a $5 a month option that gets you our monthly Q&A, and if you send us in a question, we'll include it in the Q&A as well. And then if you do the $100 a year, you get everything the same as the $5 a month, but of course you can also get yourself a 20 or 22 millimeter Grey NATO, which is signed TGN, a crew sticker, and a thank you from Jason and I. Those are how you can support the shows if you want. But beyond that, Jason, how have you been? It's been kind of like I was doing a little bit of travel, so we've only touched base a couple times in the last few days. Things good?
Yeah, things are good. We had kind of a fun week. We had an interesting week because we, as you might remember, we lost both of our cats last year, and we've been catless for the better part of 13 months or so. And we had talked about doing some fostering of cats, and we did our first kind of short-term foster care thing this past week. There's a kind of a cool crowdsourced animal shelter network here in Minnesota called Pet Haven that instead of having a physical location where they shelter animals, they just use this big network of volunteers that take in dogs and cats, and we are what's called respite fosters. So it's when the longer term foster need to take some time off, go on vacation, travel, whatever, we'll cover for them for, you know, whether it's a weekend or a week or whatever. So we took in like an 8-year-old cat for the past week from a couple that were traveling.
What's the cat's name?
Yeah, the cat's name was Nugget. 8-year-old kind of gray tiger striped cat. He was a big boy. He was pushing 20 pounds. They said he's on a bit of a weight loss program, to which we contributed with, you know, very careful feedings and that sort of thing. But he was very sweet. He was a very timid cat, but very gentle. And once he warmed up to us, he came out and was a real sweetheart. So it was fun to have a cat back in the house. And we were, you know, as usual, we got attached to him by the time he left 7 days later.
But
it was a good way to dip our feet back into kind of the cat world. So that was fun. And you know, aside from that, it was a cold week. I mean, we got a decent amount of snow last week, and you know, been building a lot of fires and kind of reading books and hanging out inside. And I got out for a hike this past weekend again, which is something I'm trying to do more of this winter, just, you know, like weekly hikes just to get out on some of the local trails. And that always feels good to get out in the sun. So
for sure.
But other than that, we've got a good friend is visiting us this week, and we're going to, after we click off here, I'm going to go and start ramping up. We're going to contribute some cooked food for the Thanksgiving meal at my parents' house tomorrow. So we're going to start getting ready for that.
What are you making?
My responsibility is mashed potatoes. Now, that's probably the easiest of the bunch, but we're going to do like...
It's important, though. It's the bedrock.
Yeah, we're going to do like some maple-glazed Brussels sprouts, and we're going to do some, okay, some carrots, and what else are we doing? There's a third thing. Oh, Gashani's going to make a vegan... green bean casserole. So, you know, picture the green bean casserole with the cream of mushroom soup. It's not going to be cream of mushroom soup. It'll be some variant of that. So,
man, you guys got two of the most important ones.
Yeah.
Green bean casserole and mashed potato.
Yeah. Yeah. I make a good mashed potato. I have to admit it's an easy thing to do. There aren't many ingredients, but I think it's all in the texture, and I've kind of got that down. So, and then my mom is going to do the all important turkey. She does that. She owns that. So that'll be great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you like turkey?
In little bits. I have it once a year.
Yeah. I'm really not a turkey fan. I've had a couple where like they were still juicy and it was pretty good. And I'm sure your mom's is incredible.
Yeah.
But I find it's so hit or miss.
Yeah. Yeah. It can really be dry.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I am really curious. And this is obviously right on topic for the show. Very important. what's the mashed potato plan? Do you like the whole sour cream? You do the garlic skin on any of that kind of stuff or just straight down the middle?
No, straight down the middle. I peel the potatoes first, then boil them till they're, you know, fork soft, and then drain them off, mash them up with a masher really good, start mixing in, you know, blobs of butter and stir in the milk and salt and pepper and just kind of keep stirring till it gets that nice whipped texture. And you know, in the past I've added, we've got some roasted garlic that I was tempted to kind of throw in there.
Oh, yeah.
I love garlic mashed potatoes, but I know that's not for everybody. And I think I got voted down on that. So we're going to stick with kind of the standard ones. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Garlic Philistines. I understand.
Yeah, right.
You know, you mentioned how it's nice to go outside and go on your hikes and get some sun. That's kind of how my weekend went because we ended up going to LA for like Friday evening until Tuesday morning, very early Tuesday morning. Had a little bit of a project to do there on Monday and kind of felt like, why would I go to LA for Sunday evening to Monday evening?
Yeah.
If I had the option to go for a little bit longer. So kind of ended up being like an extended hangout with a few friends. We got to see Robert Spangle, which was awesome. Haven't hung out with Robert in 4 years face-to-face. Went and had some proper hot dogs and some incredible food in sort of the Eagle Rock area, and that was great. And then the other thing, like we just had some time to kill.
Yeah.
And we watched Formula One. You know, it was very early. It was the last race of the year, so that's in Abu Dhabi. So it comes up really early. So got up on kind of on East Coast time. Pretty early, watched the race, and then was like, oh, well, what do you really want to do? And I said, I would really like to go for a drive.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it had been a little while since I'd driven something medium fast on the canyons. So, you know, Turo's a great option in LA when it's basically a like an app where you can rent someone's car short term.
Huh.
And I've done it several times before, usually for more utilitarian vehicles. Like when we went out to Newfoundland, we rented a RAV4.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty simple. Everything's done in an app. They already have your driver's license and your credit card, and you're not spending a ton of time like at a rental desk, which is a nightmare as far as fun goes.
Oh, yeah.
So opened up the app, and you know, it's LA, so there's like 400 cars available in whatever geo fence that I had given the app.
Yeah.
Filtered it for manual transmission, and there were four. So about 1%. Yeah. And a couple of those were vintage cars that I didn't want to take into the mountains and were crazy expensive as well. There's like a 308 on there that was going to be like $2,000 for 2.5 days.
Wow.
And I'd like a really well-sorted 308 that like I don't think will strand me on Angeles Crest where there's no service. Sure, I could see like making that a once go. I drove I had a 308 for 2 days. It was great or whatever. I'm that maybe not that much money, but you know, if it was a little bit closer to normal.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to get stranded. I didn't really want a car that was even remotely like a stress to park or drive around LA in traffic, the rest of it. Cause we wanted to get out to Malibu. We wanted to do ACH. Like that's a bit of a spread over a couple of days. And we wanted to use it like to go to a few spots around the city. So I actually ended up picking up a 2020 Mazda Miata RF, which is the folding hardtop version in, you know, that like Fury or Furi red, that bright metallic red on a black interior. And you got to have a convertible, right? It's
Yeah.
It's LA. And I had never driven a Miata before. This is my first Miata experience. And I, you know, I imagine the drop top is the one to have if you just want pure sports, like, because it'd be so much lighter.
Right.
Than the folding hardtop. But the folding hardtop was nice. I could leave my camera gear in the car and not really feel like somebody was, you know, a sharp knife away from grabbing my bag or something like that.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the transmission's great. The motor's really fun. It's not fast enough to get yourself in much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a really good time, and the overall experience was really good. You know, it was a few hundred dollars and we put probably 400 miles on it.
Wow.
And I finally had an excuse, because it had been years that I've been going up to LA and driving in the canyons as much as possible, a couple times a year before the pandemic. And then, of course, not so much lately. But I had always wanted to drive this one road that's called Stunt Canyon Road.
Hmm.
And it's off of essentially Los Flores. So if you're going up the one to Malibu, you go past Topanga. And I think it's the next one or the one after that is Los Flores. And you start there and it's this beautiful drive. But the road, especially when you get to Stunt, is like really tight.
Yeah.
And like the last six or seven times I had my own car, or quote unquote my own car, to drive around LA, I was driving 600-700 horsepower supercars.
Oh, yeah.
And this is like a McLaren 720 would be way too much car for that road.
Hmm.
You'd just always be in second. You essentially live on the brakes, that sort of thing. So I thought the Miata would be perfect for it. So we did a nice lap up Los Flores, across to Stunt, and then down to Topanga, and it was awesome.
Wow.
You don't have, like, every now and then you feel like you've really put on some pace and you glance down and you're doing 60.
Yeah.
Which is nice, because again, in something like a 720S or a you know, a Ferrari of some sort, you glance down and you're doing double that. We did a whole drive across, like up to Newcombs and back down on Angeles Crest Highway on Sunday. And I would say the cool thing about that one is a lot of that road, the speed limit's 55. And in the Miata, that feels like you're going pretty fast on a canyon road.
Yeah, yeah.
So occasionally I glance down and I'm doing 6 over the speed limit and you're like, hey, not so bad. But yeah, I had a blast. I said to my wife, it felt like I had been in therapy for a little while. Just to blow off a little bit of steam and go for a couple of great drives.
Yeah. I mean, a weekend driving in LA, I mean, that sounds great. I mean, LA is one of those places that it seems like a lot of people have been moving there, for one thing. I mean, it's so, like, almost this exodus from the East Coast out to LA. And I'm like,
well, I think because so many people left LA for Texas over the last 2 years.
Oh, really? Oh, boy.
It's kind of a thing in, like,
okay,
the top end of comedy and stuff like that, like people who went to Austin because the taxes are different.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Even, well, like Elon Musk and Tesla moved. And
oh, right, right.
There's been a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Southern California, on paper, or when I just think about it, it's not like the first thing that leaps to mind as an attractive destination for me. And every time I get out there, I like step out of the airport or whatever, and I'm like, oh, this is what it's all about. Like, it's like,
for
refreshes
sure.
My memory, like the weather, just the weather mm-hmm. alone. It's just, and something about the sky out there. It's so great. I've never really done the driving, but that sounds like a great, great adventure. I'm not sure I would do Turo myself. Like I'd be on the receiving end of a Turo car, but I don't think I'd trust somebody with my own car.
No, I wouldn't either. No, no,
no way.
But the guy that I got from, he had like 8-9 cars in a little garage.
Yeah.
So this was his business.
I see. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it always depends. Like, I could see if you live somewhere where you don't drive that often, but there is some tourism, but mm-hmm. and you want to have your car payment covered or whatever. I
sure.
get it.
Yeah.
If like for somebody to borrow the Jeep, it's my only car. And I
yeah,
need it
true.
For some frequency.
Yeah.
No, I had an absolute blast. Super fun. I don't feel any way about the way a Miata looks.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're almost like one unit of sports car.
Yeah.
But if you could get some an experience similar to that in a car that I think had more of an aesthetic value for myself, like an older Alfa or something like that, then
yeah,
I think that'd be pretty good. And then you look at the price, and those RFs are not cheap. That's a, you know, pushing a $55,000 car in Canada.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But you had an NC, right?
Yep, we did. Well, we had with the retractable hardtop, it was the previous generation. And I remember I had taken it in for service at the Mazda dealer once, and while I had time to kill, I asked the sales guy if I could take one of these RFs out on a little test drive, and he went out with me, and he was kind of chattering away as I was, you know, going through the gears, and took it on kind of a windy road. And it honestly, it didn't feel different enough from the one we had, which was, gosh, what was the year we had? I can't remember, mid-20 teens or something like that. And Mm-hmm. No, it was an 08. I'm sorry. It was a 2008 that we had.
So an early NC.
Yeah. I love that car. I mean, I didn't fit quite as well. Gashani drove it most of the time and she fit perfectly in it. The RF didn't feel different enough that we felt compelled to upgrade. And also I kind of preferred the full retracting hardtop to...
I would too, yeah.
To kind of that, I don't know what you call it, a Targa style, whatever, where it has that the kind of...
The rearward element.
That? Yeah. I like that idea that when you look over the back, you feel like you're almost like... in a boat, you know, like you look out over the long rear deck and you see just road behind you instead of like a window or whatever. So,
yeah,
but really fun. I mean, they're just such fun cars.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a bunch. It was a really nice kind of change of pace and something to do. And, you know, the kind of like I always dream, and we've talked about this on the show before, I always dream about having a car like that in Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah.
And having the car is only one part of the problem. Having somewhere to drive it.
Yeah.
Is the other half. And I always, whenever I go to LA or somewhere with a great road, mm-hmm. even some of the driving around New York that I've gotten to do recently, I always get enamored with the idea of having a little sports car of some sort. And then I have to come to reality where like I'd have to drive 30, 40 minutes to even get a road that wasn't busy, let alone a windy road.
No, that's too bad.
Right. So it's just, I'm not sure that it's in my future right now as much as I'd like it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see. If I got in with the right group of people and they were doing some drives occasionally and knew the right roads and that kind of stuff, then I could see changing my mind on it. But it's tough to, you need both, right? You can't just have a car that you love to drive. You have to have somewhere that you love to drive it. And it doesn't make that much sense.
When you talk about traffic and places to drive, when I picture LA, I think traffic. And I think...
Oh, we spent a long time in traffic.
Yeah. And I imagine you're not the only person who thinks on a weekend, hey, I'm going to take my cool car up into the mountains and do some driving. Do you see a lot of other people just doing the same thing? And are you all up at like 5 a.m?
I mean, that was the original plan, but then we ended up doing the Formula One race, which is early Sunday.
Yeah.
And then we went out more in the middle of the day, more because I just figured like, hey, I'm not going to drive with my hair on fire in a Miata to begin with.
Yeah.
So but there was a lot of just people driving, probably to go hiking, probably to go, maybe they're mm-hmm. finishing camping or who knows, like whatever.
Yeah.
There was some people on there's whole sections that, you know, I probably had 10 or 12 minutes at a time. With nobody kind of impeding me. But then occasionally you'd be going and, you know, in my mind, I'm going like, oh, I'm going kind of fast for a Miata. And then you'd get buzzed by 5 sport bikes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That are doing, you know, 3 times the speed.
Yeah.
And, and then at every big turnoff, as you go up, there's these huge like parking lots, essentially.
Yeah.
At every one of those, there was stacks of enthusiast cars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then at Newcomb's, there was 15 or 20 cars,
that's
you know,
amazing.
Guys who'd clearly driven up in a crew and were stopping to chit chat for a little while and then maybe keep going.
Yeah.
If I'd had more time and more effort, I think this car would have been, it's a little small and underpowered for the road, but as you get up ACH, you can turn onto, I think it's 10, Highway 10, but Upper Big Tahunga is what it's called. Mm. And that road, especially in something fast, is ridiculous. And they've repaved a big section of it, so it's also like super smooth, which is fun.
Wow.
So I probably rambled enough about driving around. It was a fun weekend, had a good time, and I had a couple of interesting watches with me. Huh. So one is part kind of into the main chat, the wrist check. We'll get to that. I'm very excited about it. It's been months, and we can finally talk about it because it's out. But the other one I wore quite a bit, especially on the flight, like the day where I was flying, was the new Garmin Mark Adventurer Gen 2.
Oh, nice.
So the Mark is that like very premium line that they offer. I mean, this is more than $2,000 for a smartwatch.
Yeah.
You know, think of all the Garmins that we've tried, from something like an Instinct or a Vero to the Phoenix stuff to the Descent stuff. This is peak Garmin, absolutely.
Mm.
The case is incredible. It's grade 5 titanium. It's beautifully made. You'd swear it could easily be something from Tag Heuer, or I would say like in some, like depending on what you're talking about, like the titanium X33 Regatta from Omega. So like it definitely feels the part. And then the biggest difference here is that it has an AMOLED screen. So it's a screen that would absolutely compete with an Apple Watch screen or your smartphone screen. It's like pitch black, really bright colors, really high resolution. And like if you're really into the Garmin world, I could see this being like the dream spec. But you also get almost everything that this does in a Phoenix, just not as nice a screen and not quite as fast. This thing, every button, the response is immediate. So it must be, I don't know, maybe it has more RAM or better processor, that kind of stuff. So I wore that a ton, super comfortable, really enjoyed it. I'm still bouncing back and forth with how I think about the Apple Watch Ultra, like what I think it's really good at and what it maybe isn't. And the Garmin is really, it does so many similar things, but it does them all differently. So, you know, there's no apps. It just has points of data, whereas the Apple Watch has like its own apps and can be its own phone and that kind of stuff. And then on top of it, you get an entirely different world in terms of battery life. Didn't bring a charger because it said like I had 16 days. I was only going to be in LA for 4. And then over that time, because I wasn't wearing it to track my sleep, I would shut it off at night. So I came back with 16 days.
Wow. Wow.
Just so the battery life's really good. I think I used a day of in terms of hours.
Yeah.
In the, you know, maybe 2 days I wore it going to and from LA. So that was really good. And I'm impressed by it. And we'll work out how it needs to be covered as a story in the future. Maybe it's something for a TGN, or maybe it's more of a written sort of story. I'm not so sure yet.
Yeah, I remember you and I sat in on the Mark presentation from Garmin a few weeks back, and it looked like a real step up from any other Garmin, but also even from their Gen 1 Mark series that you and I both got a chance to try a couple of years ago. And
yeah, the Gen 1 was a really impressive watch, but I felt like what it missed was having a super premium screen.
Oh, sure.
So I think they've nailed it with the new one.
Yeah, kind of cool that you're able to try that out alongside the Apple Watch Ultra. I don't think that they're direct competitors in either brand's minds.
Garmin's but, 3 times the price, yeah.
But kind of cool to kind of experience 2 high-end, you know, very of-the-moment smartwatches at the same time. That's great.
Yeah, and especially with getting back into figuring out what the exercise scenario will be over the winter.
Yeah, yeah.
Between weights and a trainer for the bicycle and maybe going on hikes and, you know, if it stays not too icy, little runs and stuff like that, it's nice to have these to kind of pick them up and use them for those purposes and see how they kind of do the same thing, but from their own side as in terms of like a style or an execution.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, other than that, we can probably get into wrist check because I've the thing I've been wearing the most, I have it on my wrist now, is that new Mito LE with Hodinkee, which I'm just like super, super in love with.
Yeah, that's a cool watch. I love the Hodinkee always does a great job with kind of the launch platform, you know, the accompanying videos and photos and this one particularly.
Sure.
So it was really cool. That watch looks great.
Yeah. So I saw this a long time ago and I've kind of been like excited about it, and then it was going to come out a little bit early and then it didn't, and like things shift around, you know, with these limited editions and that kind of stuff. But this is the Mito Ocean Star GMT limited edition for Hodinkee. By the time this episode comes out, I believe there will still be some available on the shop. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't spend more than 2 or 3 minutes talking about it. But think about how often all I talk about is like what it costs to get a GMT, right? And you can get a really good collar GMT where the 24-hour hand is independently adjustable for another time zone for like $300-$500. Seiko will sell you a really nice one for a little under $500, right, with the SSK series.
Yeah.
But for a long time, if you wanted a, I'm going to call it reasonably sized, which might upset a few people, but when I say reasonable, I mean in the middle, 39, 40-ish.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted that size and you wanted a flyer GMT, so a GMT where the hour hand, the main hour hand, is the one that jumps. So when you land in a new time zone, you just change the hour hand. You don't stop the seconds hand. You don't mess around with it.
Yeah.
You just change the hour hand and keep going. And preferably, if you cross midnight, it advances the date as well. So what we have in this one is a 40.5 millimeter case. It's 13.4 millimeters thick and 47 millimeters lug to lug. So it's within shavings of a millimeter of an SPB 143.
Yeah.
And it uses an Edisio 6 Flyer GMT. So you get all the features. It's the right size. I think it's super pretty. It's based on the look of one of those multi-center chronographs that he made in the past. It has a very classic design. The loom is white. It's not like an aged faux loom. It has a 24-hour bezel. I'd love to see a version eventually with a dive bezel, but this is a 24-hour bi-directional bezel with sort of silvery white markings on a black base and a red. It has a loom pip. You can still use it to time stuff. I did several times over the weekend, but it isn't a dive bezel. The minute track is on the Riot, and then you have sort of a multi-sector sort of dial and a red, a very subtle, I would say, red second time zone hand for your home time zone. I'm absolutely in love with it. It's the easiest thing. It's $1,390, and it comes with a leather strap, a nylon strap, and a mesh bracelet, all of which are quick change.
Yeah. I've been impressed with Mito in general over the past few years. I mean, it's one of those brands like Certina. I remember, I think it was the same Baselworld several years ago, probably pushing 5 years now, that I remember visiting both of those brands for the first time and being like, okay, this is, you know, you're onto something. It feels different than Tissot and Hamilton and some of the other mid-tier Swatch Group brands. And Mito's got a great legacy, great history. I mean, I love that vintage logo on this one. It's really cool. Yeah, I love the nods to the old one.
Yeah, vintage logo, no crown guards. it's in a different case than the decompression timer.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a new case for them that this is the first time it's being used. Presumably will be used in lots of watches.
Yeah.
I just really like it. I think the price is right. You know, if you want a wearable, again, I'm using that. If you want a 40-ish millimeter Flyer GMT, your other option, of course, would be like a BB GMT, which is a little bit bigger at 41 millimeters and a good bit thicker than this Mito.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, the better part of $5,000.
Right. Yeah.
So I just think like this is offering something that a lot of people have asked for. And I know in my case, as soon as I saw the rendering, you know, months ago,
mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, put me down for whatever it is. I'll buy one. I'm happy to. And now I finally have it. You still get 200 meters water resistance. So if you want to take it on vacation and go snorkeling, sure, whatever, you're good.
Yeah.
It's the right size. It fits really nicely. The loom's pretty good. You know, the markers and hands are small in terms of the loom size, but when it fires, you can read it at night,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what you need. And otherwise, I like the aesthetic. I've got it on a gray NATO now. I guess the only note, the thing that comes up is it's we're now into another, in my opinion, really good watch that's 21 millimeter lugs.
That's a thing now.
Right? It seems to be. I'm not really sure why or how or what that, or I mean, I guess when you sell a watch and you include three straps,
yeah, true.
Most brands would be like, you're covered.
Yeah, right.
What could you possibly need? I have it on a 20 millimeter NATO. The gap doesn't bother me. There is a tiny gap there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't bother me. But I guess it's worth asking, like, is we should put a poll or something out to all right. the supporters. Like, how do you want us to try and get a proper 21 millimeter gray NATO made? Is that something people would be keen on? We could probably sort that out. If there's enough interest, if there's only like 30 of us, then right. I don't know.
Well, who knows? I mean, even if there's just 100 folk that are interested, I mean, that might be justification. We'll see. Let's do that. I mean, just throw it in the comments. I mean, informal poll. Cause what watches are out there that are 21 these days? I mean, I'm wearing one today. You're wearing one today. Mm-hmm. You just had the Pelagos 39.
New Pelagos. New sub.
Yeah.
The current sub is 21.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Maybe this is kind of a thing. You know, the Speedy was always 19, so you had to have 19 millimeter straps. And now apparently 21 is how we're going for around 40 millimeter sport watches. I, you know, who wouldn't have preferred 20 just so that I don't have to change straps? You know, and it was weirder. It's not so much that I didn't have a strap that would fit it, because I don't really, like I said, I don't mind the gap that much to go to the 20. I don't have any 21 millimeter bars. Because this has all quick change.
Oh, that's the weird one. Yeah, true.
Yep. Right? So like you'd put a 20 in there and they'd fit. And then the moment you strap the NATO on, it would pop.
Yeah, yeah.
And so make sure that you, but order yourself a little bag. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have an order from Esslinger, so I don't mind. I didn't get a deal or anything, I can say. But Esslinger for that. And I need to buy, I've bought now two sets of female spring bars for a vintage watch. I just got back from service. My Chronograph Swiss. And both,
you were able to find something.
Oh, I found them. They're not the right size. They're the right size when they're extended, but they don't compress far enough.
Oh,
so okay. I'm still looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll do yet another spring bar order. Wait, I'll never actually get to wear this watch again. We'll see. But yeah, that's the new Mito Ocean Star GMT. I really like it. If you have any questions about it, put them in the comments or hit us up on the Slack, which you'll be able to do by the time this episode comes out. Check your email for that link. But I'm absolutely thrilled. It wears really well. I'm gonna wear this a ton. I really like it.
Yeah, that's one of those watches that has you written all over it, I think. I mean, given the specs and the size and everything else, I think that's super cool.
For sure. Elegant and well-traveled. This sounds like me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's you. Yes.
All right. What have you got on wrist?
Yeah. Well, speaking of 21 millimeter lug width watches, I have one that's also somewhat pertinent to today's topic. I've got my... Seamaster Professional 300 meter diver, which I've called the Arctic Bond, with a white dial, ceramic,
nice.
Bezel and dial, and I threw it on the steel version of the No Time to Die mesh. I ordered this bracelet, gosh, probably a year ago, and I found I haven't been wearing it much. Okay, this is a bit embarrassing, maybe a little maddening. When I ordered it, I didn't realize that what I was ordering was a 20 millimeter width. And so there is that slight gap. I mean, it's a millimeter. It's hardly noticeable at a glance, but if you like really study it, it's like, there's this gap, you know, with the bracelet where it meets the case. But I've kind of come to peace with that, that kind of oddity. And it is a great bracelet. And I do like this watch. I kind of go in spurts with this one. I wear it for kind of a long period. Then I put it away for a long period. And, given today's news about the new Bond watch, which we're going to talk about in a bit here, it just seemed like a good time to pull it out and throw it on this bracelet, which lo and behold is on that new watch. Presumably the one that actually fits it.
Yeah, I love the white one. I'm excited to talk about this new one. You know, I'll be honest, like we were toying with the idea of not doing an episode this week because it's a holiday. We're still just kind of scrambling to be ready for tomorrow. We thought we'd take the week off, right?
Yeah.
And then in short order, the Mito finally launched and I really wanted to talk about it. And then now we have a new steel kind of like proper bond of the 300 meter.
Yeah.
So why don't we jump right into that? I mean, we know the white one really well. I'm a big fan of it, but I got to say, but the Bond LEs typically miss me pretty good.
Very much. Yeah.
But the No Time to Die one is so cool in person, despite the faux vintage stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have the new one. And I really like this.
I do too. I do from the front. And we can get into the back in a little bit.
Yeah, the back is weird for sure. For sure. The back is weird. And look, let's be honest. There's also a second version in Canopus Gold with a gem set bezel. And like, if that's your jam, all good. It's not doesn't really fit for us.
Right.
You can absolutely catch it online. I think the dial's very cool.
Yeah.
But the overall execution, I'm deeply about this new 60th anniversary in steel. So Jason, why don't you give everyone the rundown? Because they're not breaking the mold, but they've done some cool stuff.
Yeah. I mean, compared to what I'm wearing right now, this white Seamaster 300, it's the same case. So it's the 42 millimeter steel Diver 300 case that we're all so familiar with. And it's kind of a mix between what they tried to do with this watch is do a blended tribute to the very first Seamaster Diver 300 that Pierce Brosnan wore back in GoldenEye in 1995, and then the No Time to Die one that Daniel Craig finished up with here just this past year. With regard to the second one, the No Time to Die version, we all loved it with the titanium case and the titanium mesh bracelet. They've done this one in steel, so it's more familiar to those of us that have worn Diver 300s over the years. And so they've done a couple of new things with this one. So they went back to a dark blue dial in anodized aluminum, as opposed to the ceramic that we've been seeing on so many Seamasters in the past few years, and also an anodized aluminum dark blue bezel. So we've got a steel case with the blue dial and blue bezel. And the dial is now back to those kind of microwave pattern that we saw in the earlier Seamasters, as opposed to kind of the bigger, bolder, deeper waves that are on the ceramic dials. The bezel, they've replaced the inverted triangle, kind of the pip, as we call it, at 12 o'clock or at the zero point on the bezel. They've gone with a 60 in reference to the 60th anniversary of Bond. And I saw a loom shot of this watch. We haven't seen this watch in person, of course, but in the loom shot, that 60 is colored differently. The loom is, I think it's like a bright green as opposed to the blue of the rest of it. So very cool. It has a lollipop sweep seconds hand. So that's...
looks good.
That's kind of a cool little new feature. Comes on the steel mesh. So that wonderful adjustable mesh bracelet, like the one I'm wearing on this one, they're providing it on that strap or that band as well. And then when you flip this watch around, it has a sapphire case back that is laser engraved with the gun barrel, kind of that's familiar from the opening of all the Bond films. And then they've done this kind of weird, quirky innovation where there's like this moiré animation of James Bond, like walking across the gun barrel, like we see in the beginning of a lot of the movies. And it's somehow tied to the seconds hand mechanism in the movement of the watch. And it's like two overlaid circular discs that kind of move across each other continuously to make this illusion of Bond walking across the gun barrel. You know, having only seen it online and in some animations, it's cool. It's over the top for me. I would wear this watch and you know, it's kind of a party trick to take it off and show people the animation on the back, but I'm all about the front of this watch. I just think the aesthetics have a bit of a retro look, kind of back to the Brosnan era, but in a really nice deep blue. I really like that blue.
I absolutely agree with what you said on this. I think that the back is goofy, but like there is a little bit of goofiness to a lot of these Bond things, whether it's a 007 on the seconds hand or whatever. And the way I see it is if you keep the goofiness to the case back, it's all good.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. You know, we've even seen versions where that rifling effect is on the main, on the dial. And that's a bit too much for me. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm saying that's like a super subjective. It's a bit too much for me.
Right.
And the thing on the back with this one, with the little Bond that's stepping across into the thing, I think it's executed in a way that's very cool, but the overall thing is probably too much for me.
Yeah, yeah.
That said, if I were in the market for a 300M right now, would that stop me from putting this at the top of my list? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I think this thing is really cool. I think the 60-minute bezel is a little weird, but I get it for this one. And I like that they have at least gone to the extent where, yes, you don't get a pip, but like you mentioned, the 60 is the green glow loom, which matches the hour hand on a Seamaster, which is also green.
Yeah.
So you at least get a little bit of a nod to that idea. I think the execution is really good. I think it's cool that they made it in steel. I absolutely adore the dial and the fact that they did it without any other colors.
Yeah, same here.
So there's not a yellow or a red accent. It's very steel and blue.
Right.
And I think it's super handsome. It'll be neat to see who wears this mm-hmm. in an upcoming Bond movie and if it is the exact same or if they, of course, they will, of course, make another one for the next film.
Yeah.
But you'd at least guess that when whoever it is gets announced, this is what's going to be on their wrist.
Right.
And they've got a shot with the double stripe gray blue NATO. And I don't even like stripe NATO, so I think it looks pretty good. At $7,000, that's not like a massive premium or like it's a lot more, but it's not like a massive premium for one that has the mesh bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what you paid for the mesh bracelet clean?
I don't. I did get a nice deal from my friend at the local Omega dealer, and I remember it was a couple hundred bucks off whatever they were charging for it. But yeah, it's not a cheap outlay of money. In fact, I would highly endorse people go for that Heimdallr version that you have, which is probably 90% of the same one. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the other thing to keep in mind is if you're just looking for the blue, they already make a blue one.
Right.
With a normal bezel, a normal case back. Yeah. It's the you know, ceramic ZR dial, so it's a little shinier than I assume this one will be.
Mm-hmm. I think, as you said earlier, so many of the kind of Bond commemorative watches, not the ones necessarily from the movies, but the commemorative ones with the gun barrels and the 007s on the sweep hands, they always feel a little too garish, a little over the top. This one is almost subdued, I think. It's a darker... Yep. More of a navy blue. There's no date, mm-hmm. which is great. It's refreshing. It's kind of like the No Time to Die one. It's the 8806 caliber without a date, which really cleans up the dial. And like you said, no, not even a red accent on the dial, which surprisingly, like this stark kind of navy blue and white with no date. It really is nicely kind of understated. I really think. And I think putting this on, assuming you could source 21 millimeter straps, which, you know, they're out there, of course.
Oh, for sure.
Can you imagine this on a gray NATO? How lovely that would look? Just really
look incredible.
Toned down. Really great.
It's just one unit of a really nice dive watch.
Mm-hmm.
I like the aluminum. I like these other elements. I love that it's all white.
Yeah.
Emission, like white daytime coloring for the loom.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no Fotina. It feels very like modern and crisp and like this is Bond now.
Yeah.
You know, referencing something from the past.
Yeah.
The Bond that wears this might not be driving in DB5.
Right.
He might be in the Super Leggera like 007 was in No Time to Die.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Yeah. So, and apparently this is not a limited edition. It's limited production. I'm not quite sure how to explain that, but.
Usually means it's not numbered, right? The box isn't numbered. The case back isn't numbered, theoretically, there won't be that many of them.
Okay. Right. Right. Yeah.
That'd be my guess anyways.
Yeah. I think it'll be popular.
Yeah. I think so too. And you know, with Omega, sometimes their limited editions are 7,000-8,000 watches, right? So you just have to keep in mind that Omega plays in every market in the world. Like we were talking about Mito earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mito's hugely popular outside of North America.
Mm-hmm.
They have a huge following in South America and in parts of Europe. And whereas Omega, that's a global thing. So like a low number of watches for an Omega release is, you know, we've seen ones where a James Bond one was 7,007 watches, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's cool. I think it's it gives me a little bit of a buzz for like who's the next Bond, what's the next movie, who's directing it.
Well, speaking of that, did you I'd mentioned last week that I'd finished watching SAS Rogue Heroes and I kind of thought that Jack O'Connell, who plays Patty Mayne, might be a good candidate for the next Bond. Did you have a chance to watch that while you were traveling?
I tried to decide which I want to do first, and I decided to save SAS Rogue Heroes. I watched season 2 of Gangs of London.
Oh, okay.
So it's a show I've waited a few years for. I feel like the first season came out in 2017, 2018, maybe 2018 probably.
Yeah.
And it's from the people behind the Raid action movies.
Huh.
And it's this story. It's a really convoluted kind of crime story in London that kind of immediately falls into very dark territory and with these incredible action sequences. I'm actually not sure I can recommend it. I just finished the second season yesterday on the way home, and it's like among one of the more violent things I think someone could put on television. So if it sounds like that's up your jam, maybe watch a trailer. I enjoyed the first season quite a bit, but it's gnarly.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not something I would necessarily put in the final notes, because I'd hate to recommend it to someone who gets 8 minutes into the first episode and feels like they're going to be sick. So
yeah. Yeah.
But no, SAS Rogue Heroes is still on my list. And I totally agree. O'Connell's probably got to be in the running, right? He's on the spreadsheet.
Yeah. Richard Madden would be good. I mean, picture both those guys like being announced as Bond wearing this, you know, blue dial watch. I think I could see it. I'm excited. I hope we get some news in the next couple of years. They're pretty coy about even telling where they are in the process, but you know they're out there looking.
Yeah.
So.
And it'll be a big thing. You remember how big it was when they launched?
Oh,
Craig?
Yeah.
The boat on the Thames.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Helicopters, you know, they flanking gunships, all this sort of stuff. It was nutty. So yeah, I talk about pomp and circumstance. I like that stuff, and then I don't want it on the back of the back of the watch. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Clearly, I think they know their market better than we know. You know, maybe the market of our own wrists, right? But
right.
Yeah, I think it's a cool thing. I'm just thrilled to see like a chill take on a Bond watch. It has such a relaxed, normal watch feel to it that I could absolutely see people buying this simply because it's a great iteration of the Seamaster.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because it's the 60th Bond thing.
Right.
Which is kind of how I felt about that Spectre 300 years ago with the 12-hour bezel.
Oh, yeah. Right. That was
and
nice
the lollipop tape. Hand. I thought that was rad.
Yeah.
At the time, I was like, oh, maybe with a discount and this and that. And it was like, dude.
Yeah.
This is way too much. But yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's probably enough on Mitos and Omegas and all that kind of stuff. I'm excited to see how this hits the crew in the Slack and everything. So be sure to get in there and chit-chat as you can over the weekend. What do you say we jump into some final notes?
Yeah, sure. I've got kind of a fun one, and actually, one of our longtime members and who was kind of a early member of our Slack group in the past couple of days, Chris Soule took part in this along with Ben Lowry and his father Greg. These guys are all big expert historians / fans, nerds, whatever you want to call them, around C-Lab. So this was the U.S. Navy program back in the '60s that put men on the bottom of the sea in habitats. And they were visiting the Man in the Sea Museum down in Florida, and they got to take part in and be a part of a short documentary film that's now on YouTube that's called Sea Lab Legends, Man in the Sea. And it was produced by a friend of theirs who's on Instagram at Lord Life Official. That's Lord with an E, Lord Life Official. We'll put a link in the show notes, of course. And it's a kind of a short documentary film that visits with a couple of the guys that took part in the Sea Lab program. You know, many of them all of them are quite old. Many of them have actually passed on. But they did the filming right at the Man in the Sea Museum in one of the old Sea Lab habitats with a lot of really cool memorabilia around. A bit of a buzz to see Chris and Ben and Greg pop up in the video and be interviewed. After meeting them, and actually I got a chance to dive with Ben and Chris in Chicago when we were there for Wind Up this past summer. And these guys have a real passion for this. I think, you know, the Sea Lab program is something that has always fascinated me. And I remember reading the book by Ben Hallworth a few years ago called Sea Lab. And I highly recommend that book if you haven't checked that out. You know, this was a program that the Navy was doing at the time when NASA was putting people in space and on the moon, and it just did not get the attention that the space program did. And that's a real shame. And I think now we're starting to see a resurgence in interest, largely due to guys like this, that are promoting it, through social media and through short films like this. You know, Ben runs the Submersible Wrist, Instagram account, and he's gotten quite a nice following lately, and he posts a lot of great old archival photos and videos from the Sea Lab program, among other things. Yeah, I just recommend, you know, checking this video out. I mean, this is like, these guys were the real heroes, these Sea Lab aquanauts. They were akin to, you know, the Buzz Aldrins and Neil Armstrongs of their day, doing really bold, dangerous, cool stuff while wearing really cool watches as well. So you know, check that out. Be sure to give Lord Life Official and of course Soul and Submersible Wrist a follow on Instagram if you don't already. And yeah, just enjoy that video, C-Lab Legends, Man in the Sea.
Yeah, that's awesome. I saw this come through and you had mentioned it, and it definitely looks really cool. I'm looking forward to digging into that. You know, years ago, I was asked to write a piece for Gear Patrol that kind of summarized, you know, it was a paragraph or two paragraphs about a lot of the undersea habitats.
Oh, yeah.
And like to be told like, no, you can do 450 words.
Yeah.
Not 4,500 words. You're kind of like, yeah, all right. And then at least you get stuff like this where somebody, they got the 4,500 words, 45,000 words, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. To really dig into it. That's some cool stuff. And what an insane time that was, because mm-hmm. it feels so emblematic of its era, the space travel, the you know, figuring out how to live under the ocean and what we might learn down there. And this, like, it kind of, there was so much less maybe pessimism to the idea of like, what do we get?
Right.
When we just try something.
Yeah.
Which I really dig, and that's super fun.
What do you have?
Yeah, for my pick this week, it's actually another of these great sort of historic videos / car reviews from Derek Tam Scott, who does stuff with ECME Official. So they do a series. They're now in their 11th episode, and that's what I'm recommending, called BTS with DTS. Huh. So behind the scenes with Derek Tam Scott. And this is the Camara Automobili Evo 37 is an insane thrill ride of a car. So this is the Camara Automobili Evo 37 is an insane thrill ride of a car. And I really like these videos. I've come to really enjoy Derek on his podcast, which is called The Carmudgeon with Jason Camisa. He's kind of a delight and a nice guy. I've traded a few Instagram DMs with him. You know, just gets to drive a lot of cool cars and enjoys both what the car is today and then the history of it. And I think you see that in this video. It's a huge amount of backstory about Lancia and their progressive, you know, rally program that would eventually come to the 037 and the Delta and all these sorts of things. And a couple years ago, we saw these guys, Automobili Amos, create the Delta Integrale Futurista, which was sort of a carbon fiber recreation on a Delta chassis to kind of modernize the platform, but also make it a little bit more special and rare. And they did like 20 or 22, like very few of them. And this is sort of the same idea from a different company, Camara Automobili. And it's, you know, it's over 500 horsepower. It's less than 2,500 pounds. If you know the 037, it's a very specific aesthetic, but it's one that I love. Mm-hmm. It's kind of brutalist, and it really calls back to a time when like rallying was still done by rear-wheel drive cars. I absolutely love it. I've only ever seen a couple 037s in person, and this is kind of the, it's not so much like a singerization, which, you know, is kind of like a cliche, but it is like a rethinking. Like, they've taken the car, they've made it a little bit hotter, a little bit lighter, a little bit more aggressive, and kind of made it something that gets to connect to that legacy, but it may be a little bit more of a car for today, which I think is kind of an interesting thing to do in general. I just highly recommend it. It's an interesting video that gives you a cool backstory and that introduces this really gorgeous, you know, supercar essentially. And I can't really get over the way it looks. I just think it's jaw-droppingly cool with that wild wing and the big fenders and the incredible wheels and the color and the rest of it.
It looks like a concept rendering. I mean, every yep. image I see of it, I mean, it's just a wild car. What a beautiful car. Wow. That's cool. I'm going to watch this right after we click off. Jeez.
Yeah. It's 600 pounds less than a modern GT3. Wow. Like, I've been in a modern GT3 Touring a couple times, and they are not a car where you go like, oh, it's a little bit too heavy, guys. ECME does some cool stuff. I believe they're like a retailer or like a dealer of kind of rare cars.
Yeah.
If the outcome of a dealer selling expensive cars is they make cool videos like this, I'm on board. Yeah. I get it.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's the this one, BTS with DTS episode 11. You can hit that in the show notes for sure.
Very cool. Gonna watch that after I click off and before I get on my mashed potatoes. All right, well, that's an episode, kind of Swatch Group heavy, but, you know, we dipped into some very cool car and the C-Lab program. So, you know, fun episode for a week that we were toying with not even doing an episode. So really happy we fit that in.
Sometimes the watch world provides.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, to all of our American listeners or anybody out there that's celebrating Thanksgiving, have a great one. And we'll be back here next week. Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, and maybe even grab a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegraynato.com. And of course, if you are a paying subscriber, we'd love to see you over on the Slack channel, so look out for that email. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Willie Nelson, who said, When I started counting my blessings, my whole life turned around.